It's football at 4 on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I was just bringing Nate up to speed with the Marquette King story. That's a classic one, fellas, huh? The Marquette King one.
You've ruffled a lot of feathers, D-Mac.
I kill you with truth.
Is that what it is?
Don't have a choice. I mean, he's not on the team.
Yeah,
they cut him.
Yep.
I wasn't wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll tell you I'm wrong. Not on that one. Not wrong on Pac-Man Jones. You know, we were going through these rule changes a little bit yesterday, but some of the changes, like, it was happening kind of when we were on the air, so I wasn't clear, like, what everything actually meant. There is a really interesting one. So, say you score a touchdown, and you use the football as a prop. Like, you can do certain types of celebrations, but, like, you're not supposed to use the football as a prop or use anything else as a prop. For example, you can play leapfrog with each other and have a good time, but you're really not supposed to, like, spike the football over the goalpost. Because if you use the football as a prop or something else, you can get a flag.
But the ball's a ball. If you spike it over the goalpost, it's still a ball.
Yeah, but they view the goalpost as a prop.
Why'd they put it there then?
To kick the ball over at some point. But
I mean, come on, a prop?
I'm telling you, that's yeah, by definition the rule.
Yeah.
So you can go and do river dance and pretend you're playing baseball, or I don't know, you can do whatever you want, but you can't use props. Now this is supposed to stop you from pulling a cell phone out of the pads or carrying a Sharpie and signing the ball or something like that. Frankly, I really don't know why, but these are just the rules. So, the penalty of that used to be 15 yards on the kickoff. So now you're not kicking from the 35, you're kicking from the 20, and you're going to pay the price. The ball's probably going to be at the 40, not the 25. It's probably the equivalent of a 15-yard penalty. Well, now you can be assessed that penalty on the try. Mm. The field goals are already 33 yards long. And I was watching NFL Live today, and they said, it's had its desired effect that they've moved the extra point back. Like, there was like 200-something misses last year, which is about 94% or something like that. So, all of a sudden, it's kind of a play. If you move the ball back another 15 yards to where it's a 48-yard extra point, all of a sudden, from 94% from 33 yards, something like that, it goes to 56%. Dude.
Don't use props.
I saw Brandon McManus sent a tweet out to Emmanuel Sanders and to Philip Lindsay like, hey, guys, heads up on your celebrations this year, which I suppose is a compliment. He's, considering these are the guys that are getting in the end zone. But I could be kicking 48-yard extra points.
Which he can do with his eyes closed.
Brandon's unbelievably talented, no doubt. But there's also no doubt your odds, go down significantly from that point.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I think the ball is a prop. And so, the ball's a ball. You should be able to do whatever you want with a ball. You can pretend the ball is a pineapple or a Gatorade or a computer. Anything you want to do, that should be fine. I think pulling a pen out, pulling a cell phone out, pulling an actual object that doesn't belong on the field out should be penalized. But don't penalize them for pretending the ball is something else.
Yeah, I think the referees are a little light on it. But what do you think of the consequence if you do get some sort of flag? Like, for example,
I think it's fine. I don't have a problem with it.
A 48-yard extra point.
Yeah.
Like, you screwed up.
The kickers are so good. The kickers are so good, and their legs are so big. I mean, anything under 50 yards is pretty easy distance-wise for NFL kickers.
Okay. I just didn't think of it when we heard that rule. And I saw McManus's tweet, and I was like, wow, he's right. Like, that's going to be interesting.
And
that's going to be interesting next year if they do that.
And we're seeing the consequences of a rule change and another rule change and the chain of changes that end up irrevocably changing the game and creating scenarios that never existed before. And all of a sudden, oh my gosh, this rule plus this rule plus this rule equals a problem.
Do you like the fact that they can review calls and non-calls now?
Hate it.
Hate it.
I hate that. I hate penalty reviews. Because when you slow a play down, you're going to see a little contact. And then it's, oh, that's pass interference.
Now, what about like Hail Marys?
Yeah. It's horrible, man. I think it's a really bad idea.
I mean, how is there not pass interference on every single Hail Mary?
On every play, even. I mean, these guys are hand fighting. They're going up. They're bumping. And when you see it in real time, it just looks like a football play. But when you slow it down, you're going to see the hands get in there. You're going to see a jersey get pulled a little bit. And it's going to change the game. And I just don't like it. And it's all because of the Saints game, and they were so mad.
It's all because of the Saints game.
And geez, like we were talking about before, just get over it, man. Move on and be better next year. You know what I mean? It's a huge letdown, but use it as motivation. It'll come back around. And the refs who called it or didn't call it, they'll get you back next year.
Dude, you are tough.
How you do you change harsh. A rule because of one play, man?
Well, I mean,
there's no one play that's bigger than the next.
Did they blow that call?
It was a really weird play because the angle of it was
really hard.
Yeah. It was a bad throw, I'll tell you that.
Okay. But they didn't obviously blow that call.
It probably should have been PI.
Okay.
But I don't think it should go to the Supreme Court. I don't think they should replay the game.
Yeah, but should there be a mechanism to get it right?
No.
No.
No. Sometimes the refs don't get the calls, man. You can't get everything right. And you can't alter the game in order to try to do that because you're always going to get something wrong. There's no way it'll have the desired effect. I promise you it's going to be a big blunder.
When we come back, what does it mean to have a coach who's hard on you? What is the value? You wrote about a great story about Jackson, get your head out of here. Yes, coach. But how effective is that in the NFL? Matt Nagy had comments about Vic Fangio that seemed to say it's a positive thing. We'll get there next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
All right, Matt Nagy on Vic Fangio. Let's hear from Matt Nagy.
The players are gonna love
him. Oh, hold on, my bad. It's D-Mac with Nate Jackson. You know what you have to do here, Nate? It's very complicated. You have to take the thing and you have to, you know,
plug it in.
Do that.
There you go.
All right, we're ready for a sound check. All right, Nagy, here you go.
The players are gonna love him because he has a way of he's very real with them. He'll tell them exactly how he feels. He won't have a filter, which I love, that honesty. He's a very honest person. But there's that tough love, but they're going to end up really enjoying him because he cares so much about him deep down inside. And so he's on the defensive side as a play caller. He's one of the best, if not the best, in the league. And so I'll be really excited to see how he handles the whole picture. But he's a great guy, and I thought it was a slam dunk hire.
Okay. What kind of coaches get the message across the right way there, Nate? What do you need?
I think you need directness. I think you need no nonsense. Someone who believes in you. And someone who tells you when you mess up, but also someone who pats you on the back when you do a good job. I think you need both. But the tough love thing, it works on football players. However, it can go too far. And I've seen it go too far.
So you see Tom Izzo yell at his freshman. Everybody was making a big deal. And then Scott Van Pelt got lauded for basically saying it's okay to yell at kids. And we're too soft and all that. And everybody think that's awesome. I wouldn't want to play for a guy like that. Not me.
Like Izzo?
Yeah, I wouldn't want anything to do with him.
I wouldn't either, but these are kids too. And we're talking about men in the NFL who are out of college.
When you're a man, you're a grown man, you need another dude like yelling at you?
Not necessarily. I think every player is different, the way they are motivated. I didn't really need to be yelled at I knew when I messed up, and you don't need to be called names. And I don't think that's what Vic Fangio is going to do, is call them names. He's just going to tell them when they need to be better, and he's not going to really mince words about it.
The best way to deliver that message?
Just directly, as it happens. Not make it personal. Because what happens is sometimes it gets personal with coaches and, you know, the guys that they expect a lot out of that aren't delivering on the field. First, second round, third round picks that they're trying to develop that aren't coming along as quickly as they'd like. Those are the guys that in the meeting rooms get chewed out. And you can see them start.
Chewed out in a meeting room.
Oh, that's when you really.
What does that sound like? I mean, you don't have to do an impression, but I mean, like, what is that like?
Well, so what happens is you watch film of every single practice.
Okay.
And coaches don't see everything as they happen on the field. They go up to their office after practice, they watch the film, they make their notes, then they go down in the room, and that's when the real teaching happens. And you can't escape it there. And so if you keep making the same mistake, play after play, day after day, then the coaches are going to start getting very frustrated. Now, what I'm talking about more is position coaches, because you spend the most time with them, and they are dissecting the minutiae, every little move. And if you're not improving, they get really mad, and then they start, some of them can be very personal, and you can see a guy start to wilt and go the other way and start to perform worse on the field because he's so full of fear of messing up, and you can't play football like that.
Mm-hmm.
So Vic Fangio's been around the game a long time. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a risk that he's going to go overboard. I think he's going to tell it like it is. I've heard him speak in interviews. He doesn't really mince words.
No.
He just says what he feels. Players will respond well to that, I think, especially these days. You know, there's a lot of people with double speak, and they say one thing, but they really mean the other. Football, you need to know where you stand.
I think that was a problem with Vance Joseph, that the players just never felt like he was ever really in control or knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I actually think they were right. I think VJ was kind of learning on the job, and I think VJ was more guilty of wanting to be a cheerleader more often than kind of anything else. And then on Sundays, you would see some exasperated expressions, and it's like, well, if we're not really prepared going into this game, dude, like, you can make all the facial expressions you want on Sunday, but something didn't happen during the week.
Right. And Vic Fangio is going to prevent that because he's going to take care of it day after day. He's been around the game a long time. He's seen it all.
Yeah.
And he's finally now a head coach.
So there'll be no question that this guy knows his stuff from the player's perspective.
No question. And there's probably a level of comfort with that, with the players, knowing that they're in good hands.
Kubiak was like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We trusted that he was going to put us in the right situation.
How would he get after you?
He didn't really insult you. He didn't really yell a lot. He was just disappointed, and you knew it. And you didn't want to disappoint him. Because they put a lot of faith in you. By even having you on the team at all, they're putting a lot of faith. And putting you on the field in these positions, there's a lot of faith in you.
So would it be you just can't do that. Something like that?
I would say it's a little more aggressive than that.
Okay.
But it's all in the meeting room. So it's the tone is different from out on the field. Hey, come on! That's on the field. But in the meeting room, it's the decibel goes down. And it's, D-Mac, we can't have that. And if you keep making that mistake, there's 100 guys out there who would love to be sitting in your seat now.
And that tone.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it's not, they're not yelling
that
at
to me
you
would
in
be
meetings.
More that would be more terrifying to me in that tone.
What
than,
is?
Then you just yell at everything.
Yeah.
If you just yell at everything, you're just I'm dismissing you.
Right.
You're just that guy.
Right.
You're Bill Kolar, you're Reggie Herring, you're just screaming your head off and I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, come on. Let's go.
I suppose there's a certain amount of that during a practice that is probably, you know, encouraging a sense of urgency to keep things relatively sharp.
And the cackle coming from all the different coaches when you're out at practice, every coach is yelling at his guys simultaneously. So, but you know.
Can you hear your coach?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like a bird, like a mother bird, you know what your coach
like
sounds
like. It's
like
March of the Penguins. You can sort of identify mom and dad, even though everybody looks the same.
Right. So you know when your coach is yelling at you, but every coach is yelling something. Hey, good job. Hey. You know,
it is amazing during training camp when the whistle blows and you hear 10 coaches yelling at the same exact time.
Well, you got like 20 football coaches for every team. There's a coach, you know, for every two guys,
right?
Two or three guys. And you as a player, you have like four or five different coaches. You got your couple special teams coaches, your position coach, your coordinator, your head coach, your strength coach. There's a lot of people who are watching you. and they're all responsible for different parts of your game, and they all have something to say because they're expecting excellence out of you. So that's
so
that
you'd
part
rather
it,
have a stern coach who knows what he's doing rather than a friendly coach who's got no sense of leadership or knows what he's doing, even if he acts like he's your best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Because you want to win.
Yeah, because football is about discipline.
Right.
And it's about being tough.
Right.
And you got to take criticism because you're watching every practice on film from two angles after they've already watched it and written down.
Have you been in a bad practice where it's just, this is not good?
Oh, yeah.
We're not focused. We're lazy. Yeah. We're going through the motions.
Yeah. And also, personally, you remember when you mess up a play.
Mm-hmm.
So you know when you're in that meeting room, you're sitting in that room.
Here it comes.
And your heart starts to beat fast because you know that play is next. And they're never going to miss it. They're going to see it. And everyone in the meeting room is going to sit there and listen to the coach tell you in no uncertain terms that if you make that mistake again, you're out of here.
Now, I talked to Patrick Waugh one time, and he said, when our team is struggling, but he said it with a fun French-Canadian accent, when our team is struggling, it's the best I could do, what I do is, he said he wouldn't go and show the negative plays. He would go find the same situation where they succeeded, and he would show that to the team. You ever get coaching like that? Or does it tend to dwell in a negative?
Tend to dwell in a negative, because football is about correcting mistakes.
I would talk to some major league hitters, and they would go watch successful at-bats if they're struggling, rather than just watching what they were messing up. It's an interesting concept. I think football does dwell in the negative a lot more than reinforce the positive. I do think football is a lot of don't do this and don't do that.
Yeah. I mean, they brought you here because you're a good football player. So they're not going to keep telling you, you're a good football player. Good job, good job, good job.
Yeah.
If you stick around, then you're good. But you watch every play in practice. So the good plays, they say good job.
Mm-hmm.
They say nice job on this play, D-Mac.
Yeah.
Hell of a block.
Appreciate it, Coach. You've meant the world to me.
Good base.
You're like my second dad.
Hey. I think you're taking it too far.
Okay. When we come back, talk about a helicopter dad moment. Cliff Kingsbury. Is he the biggest idiot in the world or the smartest guy in the world? Details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Hi, Cliff Kingsbury, the coach of the Cardinals, and are they going to trade our guy or not, Josh Rosen? I've seen all sorts of things about Josh Rosen. You know, the Giants, Nate Jackson, D-Mac here, the Giants don't only have, like, the sixth pick in the draft. They also have the 17th. They have two first-rounders. So I saw speculation today, like, if the Giants really aren't high on Dwayne Haskins, and I read a report out in New York that they are cooling on Dwayne Haskins. Starting to get to know these guys a little bit. You know, they're starting to talk to him more, form their opinion, you know. So there's a possibility, for example, that the Giants offer a first-round pick for Josh Rosen. But that's interesting because they have two first-round picks. So the sacrifice of a first-round pick wouldn't necessarily be that bad. And if you think about it, depending on how you value Josh Rosen, how would you feel if you got Josh Rosen with the 17th pick of the first round? Well, if you like Josh Rosen, that could be kind of a steal.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to take on the burden of his salary like you would have when he was your first round pick. You don't get the fifth year option, but still you get a pretty good quarterback, really good quarterback, and you need a quarterback. Plus, now you can get a player at 6. You can get Devin White. You can get maybe Quinnen Williams or Nick Bosa. Who knows? You know, so crazy things happen. And you can do things where you can get a generational player for the future and a quarterback. So keep your eyes on that. I was told that the Chargers have already offered a second-round pick. A second-round pick for Josh Rosen is on the table right now. Got that last week, and the Cardinals think they can even do better.
Maybe. I don't know.
We'll see. Almost everybody has Kyler Murray going to the Cardinals. So when and where Josh Rosen, it feels like it's just like a matter of, you know, when, not if, that sort of thing. But Cliff Kingsbury came out today and said he is going to give his players cell phone breaks. Every 20 minutes or so, they'll just stop a meeting.
Stop it. Every 20 minutes?
20 to 30 minutes.
See, that hurts me because I don't know if you know, but Cliff Kingsbury was in camp here 2005 for like a month or, okay. or two. Nice guy. I met him and I like him. I think this is a bad idea. Have you ever been driving next to someone who is looking at their cell phones?
Yeah.
It's very distracting. Cell phones do not make you better at whatever you're doing. As a coach, if I would implore my players to keep the cell phones out of the meeting room.
Mm.
Don't look at your phones. It's like teachers and their students. Don't look at your phones in class. I'm going to have to take that from you.
He said he used it in college last year and it worked well.
Oh, come on.
He says the nature of young people these days is they got to answer their pants and it's better just to give them a break. So they can focus and then get back to it.
That's not how the brain learns. That's not how you focus on a task, a complicated game plan. You can't take a break every 20 minutes and then open Instagram and Snapchat and text a few people and check your email.
That's what he's going to do.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. These are going to be players who are mentally scattered. You need mentally focused individuals who aren't so thinking about their cell phones.
There's something to train your brain with the meetings, not just the content of the meetings, but the process of the meeting itself.
Absolutely. A work day should be preparing you for game day. And if he's going to give these guys a cell phone break every 20 minutes on the game at the games, if they're going to have their cell phones on the bench, tweeting and Instagramming at timeouts, then yeah, maybe. But if he wants them focused on football.
So you think it's ridiculous?
I think it's a bad idea. I do. You got to pull these guys away from the distractions of the world. Not hand them, tell them it's a good thing.
How are those meetings?
Well, they're boring.
Okay.
But they're necessary. And that's when you get to...
Are they all necessary?
Maybe not 4 hours a day necessary.
Yeah,
but
I'm wondering what you guys talk
maybe
about.
A couple, two or 3 hours a day would be okay. Well, you're watching a lot of film. So, like I was saying, you watch every single play of every single practice. You're going to watch it from a couple angles. And you're going to figure out who did what right and wrong.
Every day.
Every single day. You're also watching video of your opponent, their last four games, and every
as
play.
As a group or individually?
Both.
Okay.
And you're putting in the game plan for the next game, which is complicated. Now, a lot of teams have the tendency to reinstall everything every week. We did that. That was boring. And that was unnecessary.
And you do it the same way?
The same
way. Even if it was the same stuff?
This is a play we already know. We've learned it in minicamp. We learned it in training camp, and now we're relearning it every week. So no one's paying attention to that.
But they're doing it anyway.
But they're doing it anyway because it's kind of, you know, the protocol. But no one's paying attention.
So what's the point of doing it then?
Well, they pay attention to the new stuff, the new wrinkles in the game plan, the stuff we need to learn, the stuff that's a little different from last week.
Couldn't you just use a little break?
You take breaks every hour or so. The coach, a smart coach, will see when their guys are nodding off and tell them take 15 minutes.
Okay.
Gary Kubiak, really good at that. Really good at judging when we need a break. And if you need to go use your cell phone during those breaks at your locker, well, okay. That's a little different. But having everybody's cell phone on the desk in front of them and like...
Time out, everybody!
Yeah, a bell...
Right. Yeah, ding, ding, ding!
A bell rings, ding, cell phone time.
Oh, what's Instaface,
yeah.
What's happening?
And everybody's
here
taking photos and passing stuff around and, oh, look at this girl and look at this, oh, look at this. Nah, that's a bad idea. But hey, he's like the new age coach, you know? He's like the...
We'll see if it works. We're doing cell phone breaks. We're going to get Kyler Murray. We're going to have a different-looking offense. We got nothing to lose. We're the Arizona Cardinals. We're terrible.
But there is something to be said for trying something new because football is so much about the routine and what's worked in the past.
I like it because I know what it's like to try to get the attention of teenagers for a period of time. It's brutal. And as a parent, we have gone around and around about the cell phones over the years. You know, is it a consequence? Do you take? So you think as a parent, you want better behavior, right? You want better performance.
Yeah.
Okay. So you would think the thing that's the most important to this individual is his or her phone. And a lot of times it is. But, Nate, we've done it as parents. We've taken that phone away. Bad boy, you know, do better. Take your phone away. Not one time in the years that I've dealt with teenagers where we've taken the phone away as a consequence, has it improved performance or behavior? And it's my fault, my wife's fault, it's society's fault. I don't know whose fault it is, but it just does not get us the results that we wanted. So we just stopped doing it because not only was it not having a positive impact, it was almost going the exact opposite. It was more negative than anything. So it's a matter of, like, how do we as coaches, parents, whatever, deal with, like, this? Something that we didn't have to deal with, something we didn't grow up with, but everybody in that room as an NFL player, at least everybody under the age of, give me an age, 26, 27, has had their whole life.
Yep.
I applaud. I know where you're coming from. It seems ridiculous. I think most people would absolutely agree with you. But I just always love coaches and concepts that are just a little bit different to see if there's a new way of doing things. It's always intriguing to me. The Cardinals, Nate, are quickly becoming one of the more interesting teams in the NFL.
I hope it works for Cliff. I want him to see him succeed for sure.
We've got news on Demaryius Thomas. There's news with the Broncos in terms of arbitration. And John Elway spent an extra day in Arizona. We will have Herm Edwards on with us at 5 o'clock to tell you why. That's all still to come.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Herm Edwards will join us in 13 minutes. John Elway and John Lynch and some other NFL guys were at the Arizona State Pro Day. Herm was pretty smart. He scheduled the ASU Pro Day to coincide with the owners' meetings to try to get more attention for his guys. And there's one player in particular, N'Keal Harry, who makes a lot of sense for the Broncos. We'll dig into that in just a little bit. Demaryius Thomas, it's DMAC with Nate Jackson. Nate, Demaryius pled guilty to a lesser charge. And his felony reckless driving was dismissed. He pled guilty to traffic infraction charges and 4 points on his license, 50 hours of community service, $300 fine. So what's your takeaway there for Demaryius?
Well, I think that's good news for him.
Yeah.
That he can hopefully put this behind him. As athletes, as pro athletes, you know you're in the spotlight. You know anything you do, get in trouble with off the field is going to follow you. It's going to be in the media, especially so much now. And he's done a lot for the city, I think, and for the team. I think he's a beloved character around here. And
totally agree.
And he's probably been pretty depressed about how that went down and how that would tarnish his brand and his name. And so, he put out a statement and pretty much said as much and how important the city is to him. So I think it's good it's behind him. They dropped the felony, and hopefully he can move on and learn from it.
Is he playing the NFL again?
Yeah, I think so. If he wants to. He's 31?
I think 32. I think 31, he's the same 32. Age yeah, as Emmanuel.
He's a big guy. He's a big receiver. Those big receivers, I mean, their bodies break down faster. It's just how it goes. So it's harder for them to play into their mid-30s. But if he can get healthy and show some contrition when it comes to what happened, and he obviously is, I think someone will want him. As long as he's willing to take maybe a little less money than he
wanted.
A
little less?
Yeah, a little.
How about a lot less?
Well, maybe there's a team who wants him.
I think the price tag is. I think he's in that land.
Yeah,
I think he's in that vet. 1 year, maybe 2 year, sort of range. Gone are the days of $10 million a year. It's probably closer to two, maybe.
Yeah, he'll make more than that if he's healthy.
Maybe. What value does he add? Right now, not the way he used to be. I'm talking right now. He's a 31, 32-year-old guy coming off an Achilles, injury. I mean, he wouldn't even be close to I mean, it was at least the regular season.
When was his injury?
It was like the last week or 2 weeks left to go in the season with Houston. So late December.
Yeah. But
very close to the time of Emmanuel Sanders, by the way. Right in that same kind of range.
It's a tough injury to rehab, but these days, these guys come back so fast. I mean, they're in such good shape. The medical training or treatment they receive is really, really good. The people that are working with them know a lot about these types of injuries now and how to heal them fast. So I think DT will be probably healing a little bit ahead of schedule. And if he can show that he's healthy, he's a dominant physical specimen out there, receiver. No corner wants to match up against Demaryius Thomas. And so he's a very crisp route runner. And so if he can maintain that crispness and that health, I think he adds a lot to any offense.
I don't know if this, what he pled to, would get him dinged by the NFL. I'm not sure.
They'll probably call him in to the office, have a chat with him. But I don't know
if it costs him a game, though.
Nah, it shouldn't. I don't think so. I mean, it's a mistake. He didn't beat anybody up.
No. Bad mistake, though.
Yeah.
Dangerous mistake.
Thank God nobody died.
Yep.
Nobody feels worse about it than him.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So
I think he's done. I just can't. If I'm a GM, I'm trying to. This is nothing against Demaryius. I think he's a good dude. I got nothing respect for what he's done here. I think he's a Ring of Famer, all that stuff. But I'm just trying to create a scenario in my head where, like, he makes sense on my team. I don't know. Maybe later in the season, injuries happen, that sort of thing. But I mean, he's not even going to be healthy for me for, you know, OTAs or really training camp. So if I'm a GM, I'm just like, that's a guy that I sort of circle and I say, let's just, you know, keep our eyeballs on him in October, November, that sort of thing. But I think that's the land he's in right now.
It's kind of what happened with Dez Bryant last year.
Sure did.
And it didn't work out.
It's and Josh Gordon, kind of a different set of circumstances, but he was all over the place. By the way, the Patriots still like have the rights to Josh Gordon. Like, he's still technically on the Patriots, despite all the problems he's had. But I'm trying to think, if I'm Demaryius, why do I want this anymore?
Because as an athlete, this is what you've trained your whole life for, and he doesn't want to go out with that bad taste in his mouth.
How do you want to go out?
You want to go out on your own terms, even though it's so unlikely, even though there's really no way to do that. I mean, I imagine even John Elway, 2 Super Bowls, dropped the mic. He probably walked away and thought, maybe I had one more year in me.
Go back and look at his press conference. He was upset. It was a tough day.
Yeah.
I always think if you're really at peace with what you're doing, your press conference where you're saying goodbye to everybody is an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not that emotional. I think it's more of a fun day.
And that never happens like that.
Well, Joe Sakic had a goodbye press conference when he retired, and he was cool. He didn't get like all choked. I mean, if you want to talk about like your dad or your wife or, you know, you get a moment, you know, but the whole like uncontrollable sobs of, that tells me a dude really did not want to retire.
Right.
That he's having a hard time with it right then and there.
And there's really only 1% of players who actually get to have a
Nobody
press
Nobody gets that press conference. Yeah. I know.
You get pulled out in the middle of the night and then the train rolls on without you.
Yeah, if you get a press conference, man, if you get a press conference to say goodbye, things have gone pretty well for you.
Yeah. So maybe he wants the press conference. Maybe he doesn't want to just fade away.
Demaryius wouldn't have that, though. He's just not that type of dude. It would shock me. I mean, who do you have a press conference? I mean, what, sign a one-day contract with the Broncos and announce his retirement?
No, I mean, I think he probably wants to play a couple more years. To have a couple healthy years, maybe win a Super Bowl, another one?
I don't know. To me, DT was all, maybe. I mean, there's always a lot of money, right? You can't discount $2 million.
No.
Don't sneeze at $2 million. But, you know, Calvin Johnson, Megatron, he just kind of the same around the time that DT, Georgia Tech guy, too.
Yeah.
You could compare Calvin Johnson and Demaryius' careers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I saw Dez Bryant just, like, bumping around, I don't know, man. It was almost kind of pathetic and kind of sad. I mean, you got to hustle, I suppose, to get your job if you're trying to stay. But it's like, dude, you're Dez Bryant. Why aren't you just getting signed up? Why isn't this just happening for you?
They move on without you, man.
They move on without you.
And you claw to get back in. You don't want to let that train roll on. You want to be on it. But at some point in the middle of the night, someone's going to pull you off and throw you off. And it's going to keep on rolling.
Yep.
And no one's even going to notice that you're gone because they're just watching the train roll.
Then you become Remember That Guy.
Remember That Guy?
Remember That Guy?
If that, right? I mean...
Yeah. I guess if you're a Remember That Guy, at least you're worthy of being remembered.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the deal with DT. And so I kept thinking, would he come back to the Broncos for just a minimum vet sort of deal? Like... But then I just don't know how that would work. Like, I don't know what role that would fill. You know, you're taking time away from younger guys that you need to develop anyway. And that kind of leads me to N'Keal Harry, who we'll talk to Herm Edwards here in a little bit. And you know what? I say all the time, there's a new model on the cover of Sports Illustrated every year. Every year, there's a new one. It's amazing, right? Wow. They found somebody else this year. And to me, one of these guys this year is N'Keal Harry from Arizona State. Have you seen him?
No.
Dude, take a peek. I mean, yoked, runs like a 4.55, something like that, 4.6. Not a huge burner, but...
That's fine.
Just...
We need that here.
I think so.
That's what DT was. Or is.
That's right. And then when you see like DK Metcalf, you're like, that guy is huge and he's a burner. He can go deep. I think N'Keal Harry is a little shiftier and has some more options. And you kind of look at the mocks where he's going to fall. It's either kind of late first round or more of a second round sort of guy. You know, and I think in general, the Pac-12 has an identity crisis because... It's great for us who live out here in the West Coast, but, you know, the Pac-12 after dark for football, when you're watching, you know, Oregon play Washington State, you know, that game, that's on like at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
If you're back east.
Right. Nobody sees it.
Nobody sees it.
Yeah.
Pac-12 after dark, games are kicking off at 8:30 at night.
Yeah.
You know, who's watching that? So I think it's, and we'll talk to Herm about it, you know, about maybe that issue and the whole process and what he's doing down there at Arizona State and how their pro day was today with John Elway in attendance. We'll get there after we listen to Mark Schlereth and we learn something and become better people.
It's your daily exclamation mark with Mark Schlereth, brought to you by Shomp BMW.
We got a chance to hear Vic Fangio at the NFL coaches breakfast and the NFL owners meetings yesterday. And one of the things he talked about was his preparation and what he was doing in regards to watching film and watching the Broncos last year. I found it interesting, and I think it's a good thing. Listen up.
I surprised John in the interview when I said it, and it's held true. I mean, I have watched very little of the Denver Broncos from the 2018 season. Very little. I bet you under 150 plays. And the only guys I've watched is guys we've had to make decisions on. But if the guy's on our roster and he's going to be on our roster, I want to form my own opinion. I don't want to watch other stuff.
I just found that interesting. It's like, hey, man, clean slate. We're going to come in here and we're going to actually do the work. We've got an extra preseason game. We're going to play in the Hall of Fame game. We're going to formulate our own opinions. I don't want to look at somebody else's scheme, somebody else's coaching. I want to develop my own opinion on my players as we go through OTAs, as we put the work in. And I think that's a great approach. I think it's a fairly unique approach. I've never really heard many guys talk about that. They go back and they break down all the cut-up tapes and all those different things. I think this is why John Elway chose Vic Fangio, because of the maturity and because of his approach to the game. And I think it's a refreshing approach. Even though he's an older guy, you don't have to be a young guy. You don't have to be Cliff Kingsbury and give cell cell phone breaks to your players during a 30-minute meeting. This is about holding guys accountable and formulating opinions based upon the work the guy does for you. And for me, I think that's a great thing. It just makes me excited about watching Vic Fangio get his titties on the ground.
Mark Schlereth and Mike Evans tomorrow morning at 6 on Denver Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.